Yay!
Woo! Okay.
That was weird. Felt weird and awkward without all the credit things first.
I know. I'm like, I feel unsatisfied. Like, the spiel wants to come out, and it can't.
Welcome to Stargazing, a Stargate-gazing podcast. I'm your host, Mary.
And I'm your other host, Kathy.
And each week, we review an episode of Stargate alternating between SG-1 and Atlantis.
How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm okay. I've had a week.
Indeed. Do you want to share what you've been up to this week?
Not much is the answer because I had COVID. I'm going to say had at this point.
Yeah.
And yeah.
You broke your streak, your winning streak of never having it.
I know. I sent Mary a picture and all of my friends, all three of my friends, when I got the test because I took it twice because I literally didn't believe the first time. I was like, this can't be right. This is a cold. No, it was COVID. Then I gave it to my brother.
Yay.
Who is not vaccinated, sharing personal medical information about my family. Everyone, you're welcome.
In the U.S., this concern has been addressed by a group of federal laws known as HIPAA.
And you're welcome to my brother, who will never know about this. But he had it a bit worse than I did, but has come through pretty okay. So
thankfully, while still deadly to certain populations, the current strains are less deadly than the original strain.
Yeah.
That was circulating.
Yeah. I just had...
That's not to say it can't swing back the other way, but that is the way it is currently trending, thankfully.
Yes, that is very fortunate for him.
Indeed. But I'm gonna keep getting my yearly booster shots anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Just because even if you don't die, it still sucks.
I love getting my arms stuck with things. I wish more people would stick my arms with things.
It does not even hurt in the slightest bit to get the vaccine. I had a little bit of an achy shoulder later, which an achy shoulder for one day is still way better than my entire chest hurting with like agonizing pain when I got COVID the second time. So, yep, gonna keep getting my booster.
For sure. To be honest, last time the flu shot hurt my arm more than the COVID shot. So,
Yeah, to be fair, I got them both in the same arm, so that probably didn't help. But...
Yeah.
You know. I was like, I got to play the violin. I don't want to disable both shoulders. Let me just stick me in the one that I don't have to hold up as high.
Yeah. So I was home for about a week with that. And then on Thursday, my internet went out. And
yay.
That was fun. Cause
that's really annoying when you're stuck at home.
I was going to say, it turns out I entertain myself a lot using the internet.
Yeah.
Because I'm definitely a person who has not had cable in more than a decade. And, you know, books are a thing. But also I like to hear things and play on my phone and watch movies. And
right.
So I've been living this little bit of a less connected life the last 2 days.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad it's back up so that we could record
me
today.
Too.
Because I don't want you, no offense, don't want you in my house yet.
That
since
is
you're
fair.
Still testing positive, even though you definitely sound better than you sounded.
Yeah, that's okay. Work let me back, even though I test positive. They're like, wear a mask and you're fine. Yeah.
Technically, so it's probably fine, but you know, I'm also a little paranoid.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there was work going on my street. The water company was around. There was some other, I don't know which utility, like if it was a company or if it was the city, I don't really know. It wasn't a branded truck that went through at the same time on the street that's perpendicular to mine and was chainsawing off the tops of the utility poles as best we could tell. And I don't know why, but either the water company or the utility pole, we assumed, were the problem where our internet went out, because when I talked to, and I'm going to shout out Go NetSpeed, I love them.
We're also fans.
When I talked to them, they did some testing, and they're like, yeah, it's definitely an outside problem, not an inside problem, because I also found out my auto pay didn't go through for some reason, but I wasn't behind yet. I was like, I need to call them and find out which problem is the likely problem. Then they're like, yeah, we did all this testing. It's outside. And then they came by that day to try to fix it. But there was still work going on, so they couldn't. And then there was more work going on the next day. So they came out on a Saturday and they fixed it while there was not any other public works thing going on. And it sounds like from the guy I talked to today that it had to do with whatever they were doing to the utility poles, because he said like they moved something and didn't put it back, and so
that's annoying. No. Well, good guy, go NetSpeed. Coming on Saturday.
Real American Heroes.
Yeah, yeah, I'm all
so
for
that
it.
You can podcast.
Yeah, because they when I talked to them yesterday, they're like, "Yeah, we have you scheduled for next Friday, which is when whatever work is going to be done is done." And I was like, "Oh God,
that would have fucked up 2 weeks of recording."
Yes, I actually was going on and like trying to find out which libraries near me had Wi-Fi hotspots to borrow to see if I could get my hands on one, but fortunately, did not need to happen.
That is good. Yes.
So that's my adventurous, non-adventurous week. How are you?
Fabulous. I'm fine. I did not deal with any of that kind of stuff this week. It was, what did I do this week? I don't know. Typical week. Let's see, there were some exams. Oh, we had a snow day on Tuesday.
Ah, nice.
Which was nice. So all my students that were supposed to have an exam that day are like emailing me frantically, like, what do we do? I'm like, you take the day off. Like,
yeah, don't go to
campus
class.
Campus is closed. There's just no exam today. You don't have to do anything. That's the point of a snow day. What's wrong with you? So, yeah, I was fielding a bunch of emails that day from students who were just like, it was blowing their mind that school was canceled on.
You should just put an auto response.
I should have.
You don't have a test today. Have a nice day.
I had even sent out a message just being like, you know, just in case you didn't see it, classes are canceled. Your exam is next week. And I was still getting a shit ton of emails like, what does it mean?
Well, you never know when you're just going to lock them out of an exam room, Mary.
It's true. Although somebody actually, did I tell you about that? Yeah, yes. I had somebody who came to the exam 5 minutes late. We do keep the door locked for one of the exams, the lab practical. We keep the door locked because we don't want people opening the door and seeing the exam when it's not their exam time, since it stays set up for about a week. They got there 5 minutes late, and instead of knocking loudly on the door so that I could hear them to let them in, they went home and then emailed me later to be like, sorry, when can I take a makeup exam? And I'm like, sorry, you can't. I thought about letting them take a makeup exam, but then I also remembered that there's also a second part of the exam in a different room. So even if they couldn't get in, they could have still stuck around and taken the second part of the exam in the different room. But no, they just left.
Boy.
So. Yeah. And then they changed their story and said it was a family emergency. And I asked if they had any documentation and they said that they couldn't. And then I referred them to the syllabus and I feel really bad. But at the same time, like, why would you leave?
I don't know.
And also, why did your story change? That is suspicious. If their story hadn't changed, I probably would have let them have a makeup exam. But the fact that they told me two different reasons for why they left was why I am not giving that person a makeup exam.
Yeah.
I hate being mean. I feel like I'm being mean and I hate it, but
you're not being
at the same
mean.
Time,
you were an
at
idiot
the same time,
and a liar.
Yeah, you have to have some level of responsibility here, and I'm not doing them any favors if I'm letting them be irresponsible with no consequences. So, I mean, I guess I'm technically in a way doing them a favor, but you know, it doesn't teach them good life lessons to do that.
Yeah, not in that case.
Yeah.
I once had a makeup exam because I was on my way to class and my car died.
Yeah. I think I mentioned Kenny let me have a makeup exam even though I slept through our exam. I told him I slept through it. I didn't try to lie.
Yeah. Respect, Kenny. He probably was like, yeah, I hear that.
Yeah.
I appreciate your honesty.
Yeah, exactly. And if, like, I almost always give someone a makeup exam too. Almost always. But this was just such a weird situation where they were already there and decided to leave.
No sense.
Yeah. I don't remember what this episode was about, so I don't have a segue.
Guess who disappeared without an excuse? I don't know.
Yeah. Or, sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll tell me because I don't remember.
Or without anyone. Well, that would be SG-1.
Indeed.
Who?
Oh, that's right.
Were trapped in somewhere for a while.
Indeed.
Yeah.
They should have knocked on the door louder.
They should have knocked on the door louder. Exactly.
What are we talking about today? Obviously, we're back to SG-1 because we just said SG-1.
This is Stargate SG-1 Season 8, Episode 4, Zero Hour.
Mm.
And it took me forever to be like, what the fuck is Zero Hour? only to realize it was the president's visit, which what?
Didn't figure it out until the last 5 minutes of the episode. Okay.
Countdown to what? What is going on?
Yep.
Yeah.
Same. Glad it wasn't just me.
Yeah. No, no, it was not. Yeah. You're not alone.
Okay, good. Yeah. Episode starts with a recap. Jack got tortured by Ball. There's a lost city under Antarctica. They don't actually, in this recap, bother to mention that that's not where the lost city was. Also, they need a power source from this random planet that they happened to be on that one time. They need lots of power for the ancient weapon that they found in Antarctica. The Gold, whose name I couldn't remember at the time, but turns out is... Camulus. I wanted to say cannula, but that's a very different thing.
It is, but that's how I remember it, because I look at him and think cannula. Although in my notes this time, I was calling him Cammy the whole time and was vindicated when Jack also called him Cammy at one point. Anyway.
I appreciate it. Anyway, that guy wants asylum. And Jack got promoted.
Yay!
Yay! And recap.
Woohoo! Shall I start?
Sure!
All right. As you just mentioned, Jack's in charge.
Indeed.
Of the SGC. This whole episode is basically like a day in the life of Jack, or 5 days in the life, I guess, of leading the SGC.
Can I just say, I only just remembered that about 2 nights ago, I had a dream that I was watching Stargate and Jack had left the show and actually had quit his job after just one episode. And that was the extent of that dream I had 2 nights ago. Quite random.
But relevant.
It was relevant, but I also had watched the episode like an entire week previous. Although I think I'd been editing that day, the last episode we put out, which was Atlantis. Anyway, I don't know. I have weird dreams.
Yeah.
And pointless and boring dreams.
The elevator door opens and Jack comes out. He is immediately greeted and handed a tumbler of coffee by Poulter.
I was so excited to see Poulter and also jealous that nobody immediately greets me with a cup of coffee when I get to work.
I know. I was excited too. It's not like a paper cup of coffee. It was a reusable container, which is great.
Like a travel mug, a big travel mug.
Yeah.
Where do you think he's been this whole time?
I don't know. Maybe he took a vacation. Maybe when him and left, he was like, I need some time. And
I hope
since
so.
I literally live in the control room, I can leave for a while. I probably have that time.
Where do you think he went? Do you think he went off world for his vacation? I hope so. He doesn't really get to go off world.
I hope so. Yeah. Can they do that? Do you think they let people take vacations off world?
I would hope so. On the planets that we have, I mean, there's plenty of planets they have good relationships with. I would think that they could maybe do that on like that nice planet with the weather device or something.
Oh yeah. But we don't find out.
No.
He's just back at work doing his thing. Actually doing a lot of things. Things that are clearly not his job and that he's not actually enjoying very much.
Right. Very true. I also, yet another tangent before we get too far here. Realized that we hardly ever see Poulter actually standing, and I was surprised how much shorter he was than Richard Dean Anderson. I wasn't sure if RDA is very tall or if Poulter is just very short, or maybe a little of both.
I don't know. Have we seen him stand next to Sam? Because she's like, what, 5'9 or something?
She's like, I think she's even a little taller than that. Yeah. 5'10 maybe? I don't know. Maybe a 5'9, but yeah, she's quite tall also. Yeah. And I don't think we have,
because
he's always just sitting there in the control room.
I know.
Yeah.
Ready to change it up by saying locked.
Yeah. Indeed.
But today he is...
I'll stop.
It's okay.
Stop interrupting. I like that I interrupted to tell you that I'll stop interrupting.
Keep interrupting. It's fine. Today he is playing the role of Jack's assistant, basically. He's walking along with Jack once Jack gets off the elevator, briefing him on all kinds of goings-on in the SGC, about Jack's schedule for the day. They've got a plant that's they want to bring back from some world. There's a buffet menu Jack needs to review. They need to look at some bunting, which I didn't know what bunting was. I looked it up.
No?
Yeah. It's
the decorative
like banner things
stuff,
but like the little like triangle things, stuff like that, or buntings.
Yeah.
I had no idea that had a name.
Yeah, it is often seen on like Memorial Day floats and 4th of July floats and stuff like that around like the edges, and it decorates like gazebos in town greens and stuff like that.
Yeah, very, yeah.
Often in red, white, and blue colors.
Yeah. Yeah, they got to talk about some bunting apparently.
Yeah. There was a house in one of the places that we used to live. I don't know why I'm going on so many tangents today, but there was a house in one of the towns that we used to live that they would put bunting out under the windows of their house around, I don't know, some holiday, and it made the house somehow oddly look like it had a clown face on the front, the way that they arranged it.
Weird.
And so then we forever called that house Clown House, and I hated it because it was creepy.
Where was
also
this?
Also because Jeff always says, Clown House or something. I can't even quite replicate it, but he'll probably insert it when he edits.
Forget me, for you should forget it. You're living in the past, man. You hung up on some clown from the 60s, man.
Yes.
Just to make me cringe when I do the second
time. Yay. Well, yeah, they might be making a clown house. We don't know. They pass through the conference room where there's a couple of guys there to talk about the security in the SGC, which Poulter reminds Jack is set for later that day, 10 o'clock or something like that. Then they make their way into Jack's office where there's another rando in there. His name is Mark Gilmore, though, so I guess they give him a name and he's no longer a rando.
Indeed.
He's a gift from Hammond. He's Jack's administrative aide. He's from the CIA, but he's got the security clearance, so it'll be okay. Jack starts to try to pawn off work onto Mark immediately, but Poulter's like, no, you gotta do that work yourself, man. Poulter and Mark leave Jack in his office and head to where Mark is gonna be set up. They have a little Jack's not like other generals conversation. And Poulter's like, Jack's not like anybody. And so Poulter's going to leave Mark to start on the massive pile of paperwork that's already on his desk. He is so, so, so happy to have him there. So excited to get back to his post in the control room.
Yeah, why did he get stuck with this task anyway?
I don't know.
Seems almost like a punishment rather than a reward really? For his dedication.
Maybe Jack didn't want him to take any leave, and this is his Maybe. Punishment.
Maybe. Or maybe he's the only one in there who Jack theoretically knows the name of, because he did
true.
Address him as Walter when he got off of the elevator.
He did. I've never heard his name said so many times in one episode, or ever after that first time.
Right.
Once Walter leaves, Mark gets on the phone. The music gets a little serious, and he's like, he doesn't suspect a thing into the phone. So Mark is there for some unknown reason that sounds nefarious.
Indeed.
And then we have credits.
Credits.
Credits!
After credits, there's a very boring scene of Jack and Harriman trying to decide on what bunting to go with. It was a very pointless scene because first Jack wanted Peridot and Harriman told him it had to be red, white, and blue, except that they didn't actually have red, white, and blue, which is why I was wondering why this conversation was happening if the one color it has to be is not what you have. Gilmore comes in to say that Hammond is on the phone looking for Jack. And also SG-1 is there for their 1300 briefing. You know, maybe they got a lot of beef and they gotta
eat,
get off their chest before they go to wherever they're going.
Some beef. I was thinking they were going to eat a bunch of meat.
Or they could also be eating a bunch of meat. Yeah. Jack heads off to take the phone. Later, we're in the briefing room with SG-1. Gilmore is there just kind of skulking around in the background. They have some fake introductions. Jack's like, you've all met? Daniel says, yes, actually. Daniel has found a gate address. And the planet is one that formerly was part of Anubis's territory that Baal hasn't discovered yet, despite the fact that Baal now pretty much owns everything that Anubis did. There might be an abandoned base there. Maybe there's a bunch of weapons there. Maybe there's some cool stuff there that is important that they should go and check out. They also have some random device that they got from a Jaffa that used to belong to Anubis. And they're hoping that it will give them some access to the base. The next opening to go off-world, though, isn't until 0800 tomorrow morning, according to Gilmore. And SG-1 is very displeased. I guess I'll call them SG-1, because for now they're just going to be three members rather than SG-3 quarters. They are displeased that they can't go out until tomorrow morning. But there's already 14 teams out, and they can't go against protocol. So I guess there is a limit, and they can only have 14 teams out of the 17-ish that I think they have.
Something like that.
Out at a time? Yeah, somewhere around there. Long story short, they need to, I guess, wait for someone else to get back before they can send SG out. And also, Jack wants to send another team with them, SG-3. Sam doesn't really seem too pleased about that because she's kind of looking like she suspects that Jack needs to send backup because he doesn't trust her. Will be the general theme of that. Over the PA system, there's an incoming wormhole, but it's just SG-5 and some representatives from some other planet coming for a trade agreement discussion. Thrilling, but now it's time for Jack to go and deal with that trade agreement. Daniel and the rest of SG-1 try to convince Jack to let them go sooner, but he's like, it's just a day. Just suck it up and chill. Leave me alone, essentially.
Jack's next stop is to visit Dr. Lee. He's looking at a plant. Dr. Lee's like, that plant 20 minutes ago was just a seed. That's impressive.
Indeed.
Our new pal Mark asks the question we ask every time stuff like this happens, which is, why do they just randomly bring things back with them through the gate with no, like, caution, basically?
A very valid question.
But Jack and Dr. Lee are both like, no, it's totes fine. We've got protocols. We need to do this. We've got all these arguments. It's fine. Everything's going to be fine.
Everything's fine.
Yep.
Spoiler alert. It's not fine.
It's not fine. Dr. Lee goes on and says that, this is addressed to Jack mainly, he's like, I know we're supposed to be looking for weapons and tech, but this plant, man.
Cool plant.
It might be great for the betterment of humankind. We could have new medicine from it. Or we could, and he really shoots for the moon here, he's like, we could end world hunger.
I mean, it's good logic if you can get food plants to grow that rapidly. True. But then nobody would want to eat it because everyone is so opposed to GMO.
True.
Even though all of the food, literally all the food we eat is actually GMO.
Yep.
But whatever.
Yeah.
I won't get started.
Yeah. And that's about it. Jack is then called to the briefing room.
Then we're in Sam's lab.
Pull the lever, Kronk.
Sam is doing whatever Sam work she's doing. Daniel comes in to ask if she wants some lunch. They do a little bit of complaining about how Jack won't let them go and that Sam is definitely not concerned that it's Jack not trusting her, as Daniel implies.
Nope, definitely not.
Yep. And then they go and have some lunch. Out in the hall, Major Davis is there. We haven't seen him for a while.
No.
Yeah. I guess he's there to deal with the delegates from Amora that have come for their peace treaty or whatever it is. And apparently those people are bickering like children, as he puts it. So Jack says that maybe they need a timeout. He goes in to talk to them. They are, in fact, bickering. There's only two of them, but they're arguing about, I don't know, doesn't even matter. What matters is that Jack introduces himself and tells them it's time to take a break from all of the negotiating. It's exhausting, and he's going to take them to a room where they can relax and get a massage and room service, whatever you need. Which, I don't think that that's true. Oh. So that seems kind of mean to promise
he's
to them.
He's a liar. Oh, Jack.
Yeah. Yeah. He takes them to the VIP quarters, which are now set up with, like, two separate beds instead of one bed. And in the middle, there is a big fruit basket, which I only bring up because of the fact that there was apparently an apple on the floor that Jack picked up off the floor and then put back into the fruit basket without washing. And I thought that was gross.
I missed that. Ew, Jack, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
Jack likes floor fruit.
Right? Yeah. Anyway, long story short, he locks them in there together and leaves.
That was something.
And posts a guard outside and says not to let them out.
Yeah, that's a little nuts.
It is, yeah.
I don't know. I also, though, think it's nuts that they keep letting Major Davis be involved in negotiations, since he clearly doesn't have the patience for it.
Like, yeah, it's supposedly, like, his main job, though, isn't it? Because he normally works in D.C., yeah. I think, and they seem to only bring him in when there's some sort of treaty or some sort of negotiation.
But, like, last time, like, Daniel had to be the voice of reason between him and the people they were negotiating with. It's just crazy. I don't know. Anyway.
It is a little weird. Especially because you're right, because it does seem like Davis had, like, pretty much given up on them when he ran into Jack in the hallway.
An hour in. To be fair, I was confused about the negotiations in general. Like, why are they negotiating? Were they trying to broker a deal between these two people? Or are they doing a three-way negotiation with Earth and them?
My impression was that they were trying to broker a negotiation, like some sort of a peaceful negotiation between these two. I don't know if they're warring necessarily, but these two disagreeing factions on their planet, and maybe we're trying to bring them to a neutral third party location.
I guess it was
as like a safety measure rather than having to have one of them go to the other person's country. That was my guess.
It was weird, and it doesn't really matter because we won't see these guys again for a long time. Or ever, actually.
It really was quite pointless.
It's just...
I think there's a throwaway line about them at the end or something.
These guys just get locked in a room and forgotten about.
Yeah, I think it was trying to just illustrate all of the many different things that the person in charge of the SGC has to deal with on a daily basis.
Then we get a quick scene of Jack in his office opening his laptop to write a letter to Hammond. And then it's the next day, 4 days to 0 hour. Jack again comes out of the elevator. Instead of Walter, he gets Mark.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Who does not have coffee for Jack.
Stupid Mark.
I was like, dude, failure your first day. Well, second day, I guess.
Seriously.
Where's Walter when you need him?
Sadly, not here. Doing his actual job.
Yes. Mark is briefing Jack on the goings-on. The dudes he locked in a room are pretty mad, and they're not going to work with Earth at all, they've decided. Jack's like, but we gave them Krispy Kreme donuts.
Donuts.
Why didn't that solve everything? He's gonna keep them locked up for another day before they let him go. And then he asks Mark where his damn coffee is. Which,
seriously?
He gets the Mora load down. There's talk about Dr. Lee and his plant again wanting. Dr. Lee, I think, wants to see him. SG-1 is ready to go on their mission. This is where we learn that there is no red, white, and blue bunting, but they could mix in some red with a blue and white one.
Thrilling.
And Jack's like, that won't be the same. It's definitely serious about it. Jack heads to the gate room to say goodbye to SG-1 as they are leaving on their mission. Yep, that's that. That's the beginning of Jack's day.
Yep. Indeed, it is. Then we're on the alien planet with SG-1 and SG-3. Sam tells the entire SG-3 team to wait there, which Reynolds, who's heading up that team, doesn't seem too thrilled about. But she says it's just a random, regular recon mission, so just set up a standard perimeter. They're not going to go very far, and they're not going to be gone for very long. Then we're back in Dr. Lee's lab.
Way to jinx that, Sam.
Right? Seriously. Never say, I'll be right back in a movie or on a TV show, because you never will be. Then we're in Dr. Lee's lab. And that plant has grown all over the place. It's all up on the walls and all over the computers. Lee says that they obviously underestimated its growth properties, and it responds really dramatically to any kind of light on the visible spectrum, so that's not that great. Jack asks why they didn't just turn the lights off, and Dr. Lee says that it's kind of pretty, and he thought Jack might want to see it. Jack didn't look too pleased.
No, but Dr. Lee looked really delighted in this scene about the plant.
He really did, despite how overgrown it was and the fact that it was... already starting to cause some chaos.
On the planet, SG-1 is having a look around. Teal'c has spotted evidence of recent Jaffa activity. They can't seem to get the device they have to work, except for that all of a sudden Teal'c is like has it in his hand again, is looking at it, and they have all conveniently stood on a ring platform that then pops open and takes them somewhere.
Oops.
Yep. SG-3 radios to SG-1, but they get no response. Reynolds is very concerned and is planning to go check on them. But before he can do that, a Gwold ship flies overhead. Reynolds instead calls the SGC to let them know they haven't heard from SG-1. And also, there was an Alkesh that flew by, although they have not had any activity since then. He is requesting backup to find the rest of their people. So Jack is going to send along two more teams.
Out in the hall, Dr. Lee is there with some plants. And by some plants, I mean that same plant. It is all over the hall now. There's vines and leaves everywhere. And Dr. Lee recommends that they seal off at least this area, probably the entire level, really should be shut down. But he's still really excited about the amazing growth properties.
He really is.
Unfortunately, though, this plant is also extremely difficult to kill. And we see Siler there in the background taking a blowtorch to the plant. And the plant is not even remotely coming close to burning or dying off or anything. And then Dr. Lee starts sneezing and says something about it's also apparently spreading airborne spores throughout all of the ventilation shafts. So yeah. That's great. Thankfully, they're not poisonous and they're only just a mild allergen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really like how they use Siler just in general. I was thinking about it. The previous scene in Lee's office, he was up there with the hedge trimmer type thing, like trying to chop the plant, and now he's got the blowtorch out.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't even notice that was him in the background in that scene.
That's just so really funny. I mean, and obviously
he's always just in the background doing something. And it's usually something random.
Yeah, a lot of times it's very funny. A lot of times he's getting hurt, which is also funny. But
yes, yeah. We've commented on that.
Just love him.
He gets hurt in very strange ways.
Just love
ways.
Him. Yeah.
He's a great character. Yeah. In the gate room, Jack goes down to see Reynolds, who's again from SG-3, and they have come back with no sign of SG-1. Jack is not pleased because he reminds Reynolds that they were there to watch SG-1's back, but Reynolds throws Carter under the bus saying she insisted we secure the gate. And then there's an unauthorized incoming wormhole again. There's no IDC, and then a hologram of Baal appears on the ramp. Everyone pulls their guns, but Jack realizes it's a hologram, so tells them all to stand down. Iris is closed, worth mentioning at this point. So the actual Baal definitely can't be there.
Would we call him a Baalogram?
Yes. Absolutely. The Baalogram tells Jack that he has his friends and proposes an exchange. And Jack's like, okay, for what or who? And of course, it's Camulus. And Baalogram is going to send the gate address where he wants Jack to send Camulus. Jack says he'll think about it. The Baalogram gives him one day and then disappears.
Jack had a legitimate question, though. Is that an Earth Day or what?
An Earth Day or what? Yeah, that is a legitimate question.
But
what constitutes a day?
Exactly. And then we're at the next day. Mark is improved from the day before. He's got the coffee for Jack.
There's coffee in that.
Carne cerrada.
This time as Jack leaves the elevator.
Good job.
He's again briefing Jack on what's going on. There's been no reports from any other allies or any other SG team about the whereabouts of SG-1. And they've called for Camulus to come to the SGC and he is on his way. Then we are in Jack's office with Reynolds and Jack. Reynolds hands over a report to Jack and is like, it's a bad idea because even if they give Baal Camulus, he's probably not going to just give SG-1 back. And it could be a trick to just have Jack open up the gate. And Jack's like, yeah, no shit.
It's a trap.
Yeah. But Jack's like, everything's on the table. Mark comes in to let him know that Camulus has arrived. So Jack leaves him there and tells Reynolds to have his team ready. Mark asks, isn't it already too late? Because this asshole has no idea what the SGC is about, or he would not ask that question.
Screw that guy, right? Seriously, what an ass.
Which Reynolds then is like, yeah, no. We have all kinds of history with Baal, and also we don't give up on our people, so you can fuck right off.
Then we're somewhere. Camulus is sitting at a table. I was wondering where he's been this whole time. Like, just in this one room? Or did they bring him here from a cell elsewhere?
I think they brought him from elsewhere, but it's clearly he's not been anything but in prison the whole time.
Right. He's even wearing a prison-style jumpsuit, but this seems to be more of an interrogation room than a room someone would live in. So, yeah, I'm guessing they just have him in a cell somewhere. Jack tells him that Ball has three of his people and has offered an exchange, of course, for Camulus, and wants to know if Camulus has any idea why Ball would want him. And Camulus says there's many possible reasons. Jack tells him to pick one. And Jack reminds Camulus that he offered to help the people of Earth if he was granted asylum, but Camulus says that he's being treated like a prisoner and he didn't realize that was the case. Why he's surprised by that, I don't know, but apparently he is. Jack reminds him that he's a Goa'uld, so that's why he's being treated like a prisoner. Jack says he's just looking for one good reason why he shouldn't turn Camulus over, and Camulus says because Ball can't be trusted. But of course, everyone already knew that, so that does not help either. Camulus also states what we have already suspected, which is that no matter what Jack does and whether or not they turn Camulus over, Ball will never return SG-1.
Nope. But that doesn't stop Jack in the next scene from having Camulus led to the gate room. And Mark is like, what's going on? Why would you do this? This doesn't make sense. We don't give away prisoners. And Jack's like, I'm not. I'm just ungranting his asylum request. And Jack does not care what happens as long as it gets SG-1 home. Mark goes up to the control room while Jack and company go to the gate room. He walks Camulus up the ramp to the open Stargate and is like, you can have one more chance. Then they have a back and forth about whether Camulus is a coward or not. But this whole thing, it doesn't matter, was a bluff by Jack, who's not about to send Camulus through yet, if at all. And sends him back to his cell.
Out in the hall, Mark gets mad at Jack for not bothering to warn him that it was just a bluff and that Mark can't do his job if Jack doesn't trust him. Jack's like, don't care. That's not my problem. It's yours, basically. I guess he wasn't there with Jack this whole time. He apparently has been somewhere else before coming up to Jack to complain about this whole bluff thing. Because then, before Jack can get on the elevator, Gilmore, Mark tells him that Camulus wants to talk to him. So then we're back in the holding cell. Camulus is angry and says that he can't stay there because if Ball is so determined to have him, he's going to come and get him no matter what, and that him being there is dangerous for everyone on the planet, and he's willing to leave. Jack is not convinced that he's doing this just out of the goodness of his heart. Camulus says no, not out of the goodness of his heart. He just doesn't want to be kept in a cell anymore on Earth and wants to go elsewhere, anywhere else. Jack again says to give him something, any kind of information that'll be helpful, and he'll see what he can do. Camulus then tells him that there is a device created by the ancients on a planet out there that he knows the location of. He doesn't know what it does because he could not discover its secrets, but because the people of Earth are pretty smart, maybe they can figure out what it does. Jack asks if it might be that device that Ball is actually after. And Camulus does say that he made the mistake of bragging about it at some meeting of the System Lords at one point, so it's possible that that's why Ball wants him.
Then we are back in Jack's office, where he is continuing his letter to Hammond. We get a little voiceover action happening. He's like, I knew it wasn't easy, but if I'd known it was really like, I'd have tried to be less of a pain in the ass. The gate is activating again. Jack rushes out of there to the control room. It's SG-3, so they open up the iris. Jack heads down to the gate room to meet with Reynolds, who has just come from the planet that Camulus was talking about, where they did find an ancient device, Reynolds says, the size of a large room. But he, unlike Camulus, knows why it couldn't be turned on, he says. And it's because, as we see in the next scene, there was a ZPM, but it wasn't plugged in.
Okay, well, the button on the side, is it glowing? Yeah, you need to turn it on.
And yeah, this is where we transitioned to the conference room, where they do a little background talking about a ZPM. In case nobody knows what it is, I mean, they're all doing it for Mark's benefit, but really, he's the only one in the room who wouldn't know what one was. So it's for us, I guess.
Yeah, haven't they talked about it this show before? Or did they only talk about it on Atlantis? I thought they talked about it on Stargate
first. There was more detail involved about it. I don't know. I don't remember.
Yeah. I mean, I know obviously we've seen the power device before, but I'm pretty sure that they used the term ZPM, though, and also talked about how they're using it for other things besides
powering weapon.
Maybe
they didn't call it a ZPM, though, because in Atlantis... Rodney's all ZPM, and they're like, what's that?
Yeah. True.
Z and Z are very different, and you obviously couldn't tell from context.
Can't figure out. Yeah, definitely couldn't figure out what a ZPM was if you heard a Canadian referring to it that way. The Canadians and their Zeds.
Zed.
Zed's dead, baby. Zed's dead.
Long story short of this is that this ZPM, unlike the one that they had been using in Antarctica, still has power. More than 50% capacity, according to the readings. So, that'd be great. Except for then, all of a sudden, all the power goes out on the base because of the plant.
Feed me, Seymour. Feed me all night long.
In the control room, Poulter is hanging out. There's just a bunch of green lights on that are apparently the emergency lights. I don't remember them being green before, and I was wondering if they just made them green to make it more plant-themed.
I did think the SGC looked nice with plants. They probably should have more plants around decorating.
Yeah. It does, It does look quite pretty. Yep. We already knew that that power was lost on the base, so I don't really know the point of this scene. We just see Poulter getting on the phone to tell somebody that they've lost power. Out in the hall, Jack double checks that they paid their electric bill. Lee says that the plant is now in the walls, not just growing on the walls, but it's in the walls, and that it can, from there, interfere with both the power lines and communication lines. So that's great. Jack mentions the fact that there's no light in the walls, but because this plant is so huge, it doesn't matter because the other parts of the plant body that are exposed to the light are going to still be able to provide enough nourishment to the parts of the plant that are in the dark areas. He thinks that they should keep the whole base on minimal emergency lighting, even if they can get the power issues fixed, while they continue to try to get the plant under control. He has no idea how long that's going to be.
He goes back to the control room to check on things there. Walter and Siler do not have good things to tell him. The dialing computer is offline, and also one of the rings is stuck, so they couldn't even manually dial the gate if they wanted to. Although they do have manual iris control, so that's good at least.
Indeed.
They said that the problem might be that with the ring thing, they were doing a diagnostic when everything shut down, and maybe that kind of messed things up a little. So, bottom line is they can't dial out at all. They can receive incoming wormholes. They could probably communicate by radio over those incoming wormholes, but that's it.
Then we are in some sleeping quarters somewhere. Jack has apparently decided to spend the night at the base, and he's sleeping when Mark comes in and wakes him up. Jack says it feels like it's been 10 minutes. It has been 10 minutes. Ball is there again and wants to talk to him. Not Ball, Ballogram. So Jack heads to the gate room. He's not too thrilled to have been woken up for this or by this. Obviously, he needed to be. He's not upset with Mark. He's upset that Ball is being a pain in the ass. Ballogram says that the deadline has passed, and Jack's like, yeah, well, there's technical difficulties here, so you're gonna have to wait longer because we can't get Camulus to you even if we wanted to. He says that ironically, if Sam was there, she'd have had it fixed in just a second. And then he says, no offense to Siler, who is the one stuck working on it in her absence. He says none taken. Jack recommends that Ballogram send her back through so that he can then get Camulus back into Ballogram's grubby little mitts. Ballogram is not thrilled that Jack is mocking him, but does agree to give Jack one more day in light of their technical difficulties. Mark asks if it's wise to provoke Ball, and Jack says, it's what I do.
I had been wondering at this point in the episode what happened to Davis and those people, and then speak of the devil in the next scene. Davis is there at least.
Yeah, because it's been a long time, and those guys have to be pretty pissed that they're still locked in that room, and now there's no power, except hopefully they have emergency lighting in there and aren't just sitting in the dark.
Not having to feel their...
Maybe they have some plant to look at.
Their fruit bowl, which is the only food they have.
Yeah, their dirty fruit bowl.
But we don't hear about them. Davis is there to talk about the problems at hand.
Yes.
Which he and Reynolds are there to brief Jack on their ability to go after the Gwold with the poison that the Tok'ra developed. They apparently have been modifying and manufacturing this poison at Area 51 just in case, and they have enough, Reynolds says, that they can neutralize 3 Gwold occupied planets, which is a lot.
The poison to kill the Gwold? Gwold poison?
Yes, that poison.
Oh, right. The poison. The poison for Gwold. The poison chosen specially to kill Gwold poison. That poison?
Yes, that poison.
Got you covered.
They're talking about this because they're just coming up with scenarios where they try to rescue SG-1. And Jack's like, does that kill Jaffa too? And they're like, yep. And we're talking about tens of thousands of deaths. So Jack's like, that's not a rescue. That's a full-scale attack. And Reynolds is like, yeah, and it could, you know, backfire on us if the Gwold then turn around and attack Earth. And Davis is like, but now we have a ZPM, it's gonna be great. Before they can continue the conversation, Mark comes in to tell him that Camulus wants to have another chat with Jack.
Indeed. And then they're back in the holding cell. Camulus wants to know if they found anything on that planet that he told them about. Jack says that they did. Camulus says, great, let me go home. Or elsewhere. Out in the hall, Mark and Lee are talking about some gamma radiation that Lee is trying to use on the plant to kill it. It seems to be working, and they're preparing a method to deliver it to the entire base all at once somehow. Okay, sure. Non-essential personnel have to be evacuated, and everyone else has to wear radiation suits, so that's fun. Jack's gonna have to sign off on this plan. Mark lets him know that Jack hasn't slept in over 2 days, so asking him to do anything right now isn't a great idea, but Lee says that's why he's having Mark do it instead of doing it himself. In some other hall, there's a guy there. Apparently his name is John, and he is the president's aide, and he says to Jack that they are canceling the visit because of all of the chaos that is happening on the base right now.
Curious about this. Was it that important? Is the president's aide essential personnel in this context to stay at the SGC while they're gamma radiating?
Yeah,
because he and Jack are both in their gear. And
they are. It doesn't make any sense.
This could have been a phone call.
It really could have been an email.
Yeah.
Or yes, a phone call though.
I think that's why I assumed it was
Mark. Because they are, this guy, John, does seem to be advising Jack the way that Mark would, because they then start talking about the fact that the flagship team is in the hands of the enemy. They're basically talking about all the things that are wrong, because Jack jokingly asks, why would we need to cancel the president's visit? To interrupt Jack with his long stream of all the bad things that are happening, Jack's like, but we found a ZPM. So it's not all bad. Let's just have another day before we cancel everything. Let's look on the bright side and maybe things will get better before the president's due to be there.
Let's look on the bright side of life. And Jack goes back to writing his letter to Hammond, which it turns out is a resignation letter. He regrets that he was deluded to think he could do what Hammond did and fill his sizable and shiny shoes.
Does he actually need to resign, though? Can't he just request his long overdue retirement be reinstated?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe this is just a respectful resignation letter his good friend, George.
Yeah.
The lights then come on. Mark comes in and is like, we think the plant's been eradicated, and the dialing computer's back online, which is good news.
Did you say re-eradicated?
Did I say re-eradicated?
It sounded like you said re-eradicated.
I might have said re-eradicated. I don't know. These things happen. Weird things slip out of my mouth all the time.
If only Kathy quotes on Twitter was still a thing.
RSVP.
I don't know that we've mentioned that on here, but for a very long time, there was a Twitter account that we had opened that only Jeff and Colin and Kathy and I were on, and we would just post all the weird things that Kathy says all the time.
I say a lot of weird things, I guess.
Yeah. But that account has long since been closed down for many reasons. Primarily the fact that it's on Twitter. Really, the only reason is because it's on Twitter.
Stupid or Twitter. Stupid Twitter. Then Camulus is being escorted back to the gate room. Jack says he made a deal with Camulus, therefore he's going to go through with that. And they got that ZPM.
We should resurrect Kathy quotes on Blue Sky.
Oh, God, he can. I have no part of that.
I don't either. I'm not on there yet.
Yeah, well, I joined Blue Sky, but I mean, like, I never posted my own quotes on that, so.
Well, no, I know, but Jeff will eventually hear this and maybe be inspired to take care of the issue.
We'll find out.
I don't think so.
I'm only nominally on social media. Anyway, this is again Mark questioning Jack's decisions here.
Yeah.
And they are pretty happy about that ZPM. They bring up, like, they can defend Earth and dial a Pegasus galaxy. So, woohoo, Atlantis reference.
At the same time?
Two chicks at the same time, man.
You know, it might be hard unless you move the Stargate to Antarctica again.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
I mean, they didn't specify it had to be done separately. That was a facetious question.
Before the gate finishes dialing and they send Camulus on his way, the phone rings. It's Dr. Lee. And whatever he says to Jack, it makes Jack demand the gate shut down. So it does. And Camulus is looking at around like, what the f***? I'm very sweary today. Sorry.
Fair enough. You should be fucking sorry.
Yeah, I am. Sorry as motherfucker.
There better be a surprise motherfucker drop in here, Greffrey.
I don't think so.
In Dr. Lee's lab, he's got the ZPM sitting there on his desk, and it's very glowy. It normally glows, but I guess that it is glowing more or differently? I don't know.
The color looked off.
Okay. Mm. Jack asks why or what is happening.
Surprise, motherfucker.
And Lee says it's funny, really, but not the good kind of funny, because they think that the gamma radiation that they used to kill the plant revealed something strange happening with the ZPM. It illuminated a foreign substance that this ZPM has been infused with that isn't supposed to be there. That is based on what they know to be the normal molecular makeup of the ZPM. They wouldn't have bothered to check this one if it wasn't glowing so strangely, but they found some extra something there, and they managed to scrape off some fragments from the casing, and they did some tests. And he hands out a bunch of goggles and says, here is what happens when you introduce a constant electric charge to these little fragments that he has taken off of the ZPM. Everyone puts their goggles on and they send some electricity into those little fragments. And there is a sizable explosion, much larger than one would expect, given how tiny the fragments were that he had scraped off of it.
Indeed.
Yeah. So the ZPM is booby-trapped. And they were going to send it to Antarctica. Lee says that if they had actually tried to use it, it may well have destroyed the entire planet. So that would have been bad.
Indeed.
Mark says that that must be why Camulus was suddenly so eager to leave. Jack asks if Lee can undo it. And he kind of hems and haws a little bit before eventually saying, no, this ZPM is now useless. They cannot undo whatever it is that they did to it. They being presumably Camulus.
Maybe? Womp womp. Camulus refuses to acknowledge that he did anything to it initially. Jack's like, no, you totally tampered with this ZPM when you couldn't figure out how to use the ancient device. At this point, Jack calls him Cammy, which I was like, yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
When you couldn't figure out what the ancient device was for, you tampered with the power source so nobody else could.
Did nothing of the kind.
Cammy.
Worth a try?
Camulus ultimately is like, yeah, all right, I did that. It's worth it. It was worth a shot, right? And Jack's like, do you want to take a chance to kill Ball? Want a chance? Yeah. We could use all this to get SG-1 released, maybe, and then you could kill Ball. It'd be great. That was about it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty much
it. There was some dramatic music going on here, which I feel like I hadn't heard in a long time.
Oh, was there? Yeah. I didn't even notice.
Yeah.
I normally do pay attention to that kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know, but yeah. I was like, oh, I didn't know it needed to be that dramatic, but it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, then we're in the gate room, and Camulus is there with a case that presumably has the ZPM in it. He's going to go off, and presumably SG-1 is going to be traded for him. SG-3 is there, and they are going to take him to a different planet first rather than sending him directly to Ball's planet, and they're going to wait there until SG-1 gets there, and then I guess they're going to send Camulus on to his destination, is the convoluted plan.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work out that way.
Nope.
Because in the next scene, SG-3 is coming back, and they do not have SG-1 with them.
Shocking.
Womp womp. Yeah.
Yep.
Jack goes back to his office to continue typing his letter to Hammond. When he...
They did send Camulus on his way,
they
though.
They did. Camulus
mentioning.
Is
they
gone.
Didn't just, yeah, they didn't bring him back when SG-1 never showed.
Yeah, yeah. Mark says that Colonel Reynolds would like to see Jack in the gate room. So he heads down there and walks in, and it's not only Reynolds. It seems to be like all the SG teams. They're all just assembled there in the gate room. Reynolds is telling him they are there. They're with him. They're going to do whatever Jack wants to do. Give the order and we'll go. I thought it was a really nice scene. Like,
it was
especially
a nice
with Jack, you know, clearly having doubts about himself. I feel like this kind of like turned the tide for him.
It definitely seemed to. Yeah, he's clearly been feeling over his head this whole time, but to have the unanimous support of everybody seemed to mean a lot to him.
Yeah, and yeah, so he dismisses them and looks very,
moved.
Yes.
Yeah. In the locker room, Jack is just sitting there looking at Teal'c and Daniel's lockers.
In his
for a bit.
Big pants, his big civilian pants.
And his giant civilian pants, yeah. Out in the hall, he seems to be on his way to go home, as evidenced by the fact that he's wearing his civilian clothes. He says goodnight to Siler, gets on the elevator, and then there is an announcement about an unscheduled off-world activation. And so, of course, he leaves the elevator and goes to the control room. On his way, Mark meets him and says that it's SG-1's identification that has come through. And Sergeant O'Brien... whoever that is awaiting Jack's instruction.
It's the night crew, the night shift.
The night shift version of Falter.
Exactly.
Yep.
We get a shot of SG-1 because they are on the radio talking to each other. Sam reports they are under heavy fire and to open the iris, and Jack's like, yeah, no, I can't do that. Maybe you could go to a different planet. And Sam's like, nope, we can't get back to the DHD to redial. You've got to let us through. Daniel gets on to be like, what's going on, Jack? Just let us through. And Jack's like, you've been in enemy hands. And Daniel's like, what are you talking about? And Jack's like, remember you were captured by Ball? And Daniel's like, no, we were in Anubis's secret base. And it took us a long time to get out of there, and we got ambushed by Jaffa when we did. Ultimately, Jack opts to not let SGC die on another planet. They open the iris, and some weapons fire comes through, but then so does SG-1.
Yeah.
And they're home.
Good thing they weren't lying and that this wasn't actually an ambush by Ball.
Yes, that is true. But, you know, Jack was willing to take that chance.
Yeah.
Jack goes down to the gate room to meet them. Sam again reports they were trapped in that base all that time. They were never taken capture. They were never taken prisoner by Ball. So they figure that Ball heard Reynolds communicating or Ball's people at least, because that Alkesh was in the area, heard Reynolds over the radio talking about being out of contact with SG-1. So Ball just took the opportunity to bluff with Jack and also wait for SG-1 to come out so they could try to attack them and also get Camulus back and all this stuff. Jack's like, okay, yeah, but did you find anything on Anubis's base? And they're like, no. And Jack's like, aw, nuts.
Then we are in a hallway again. Sam is all dressed up in her fancy clothes. She meets up with Jack, who's still in his casual clothes. And he says that as much as he loves dressing up, he's only just on his way to go get changed now. Sam wants to talk to him for a second. And Jack says, don't worry about it. Your evaluation's done. You're going to be happy with it. Rave reviews. Everything's great. Sam seems surprised because she does voice her concern that it seemed that Jack wasn't really too confident in her leadership skills. And Jack asks, well, aren't you? He has no doubts about her. And she says that she has been second guessing herself for ordering SG-3 to remain at the gate. And he says pretty much exactly what she did. It was standard recon. Why would you bring SG-3 with you? And then he says that she should read what Teal'c and Daniel wrote about her conduct under fire. She'd be pleased. And then she asks if she can read it, and he says no. Jack heads into the locker room, but before he actually goes all the way in, she asks if she can talk to him about something else. She says that she was reading Dr. Lee's report about the tainted ZPM and has concerns about the fact that they have now given it to Ball, and if it doesn't actually manage to explode and kill Ball, he now has an immensely powerful weapon that he can use against Earth. And Jack says, yes, that is true. And that is also why I gave Camulus the fake dead ZPM and not the real tainted one. So she's relieved. Yeah. And there are smiles.
Yeah. And then it's 0 hour. Whoa. When the president comes to visit.
Yep.
Jack is finally dressed in his proper dress clothing. Mark comes in to see Jack and let him know it's time, and also that he's leaving tomorrow. He's only been here on special assignment from the president, a civilian audit of the SGC. That's what Jack said. Mark is like, no, of Jack personally before the president actually came to visit, and essentially then sort of throws a support slash signs off on Jack's leadership. They wanted to check up on him. And Jack's like, yeah, I know. Hammond told me about it. And Mark's like, oh no, he wasn't supposed to. And Jack's like, don't tell. So everything went okay. Mark's like, the president says, you're cool. I think you're cool. I respect you. And okay, so Mark is leaving, but somebody needs to give Jack an assistant because you can't put this on Poulter. They can't do it.
Right?
Poor Poulter.
No, that's not fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finally, Jack asks about the, I can't remember their names. They were just dudes in robes to me.
They didn't even give them names. They were just the delegates.
The delegates from that planet where they were bickering.
Right.
Did they get let go, gone? And yes.
Did they get let go?
Yeah.
Yep, that was a sentence.
I'm going to stick with it. Apparently being locked away in the SGC by a crazy leader and a maniacal plant on the loose, we'll say, has changed their perspective on negotiating, I guess.
Yeah.
They're going to be more willing to negotiate from now on. I don't know why. I would just go back to my planet and be like, let's bury this Stargate, right?
Right? Seriously.
I don't want to talk to these crazy Earth people anymore. So the last scene, the camera pans over to Jack's desk where he has printed out and signed his letter to Hammond, which right below where it says he resigned, he wrote, never mind. So he's going to stay.
Why did he bother printing it out and signing it if he had changed his mind? Because the never mind was typed.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he's going to send it to Hammond anyway. Maybe he wants Hammond to know his, thought process.
Yeah, and then he'll, scare the shit out of Hammond when Hammond thinks he's actually resigning and doesn't find out till the end of the letter that he's not.
I can't believe what I'm reading.
I can't believe what I'm
reading. Yeah.
Yep. Indeed. Did you like the episode?
I really liked this episode, actually. I liked all the fires that Jack had to like put out, and it was kind of nice to. This is a perspective of the SGC you don't get. We haven't really gotten
day to day.
Yeah, because
operations.
Hammond wasn't like the lead of the show, right. But Jack is definitely like, despite his reduced schedule, he's still the lead in the show. Yeah. And so we get to follow him around as all of this crazy shit that must have been going on all the time happens that we never see because we only follow SG-1 around. So I really liked that. I liked the silly plant side story, and the Bologram was, you know, it's good to see Ball again, that monster that he is. And it was just generally like a funny episode and a light episode, and I really liked that about it. Yeah, that's... I actually thought it was really touching, both the scene where the teams were assembled in the gate room for Jack, and then also when Jack was reassuring Sam about his confidence in her. It was just, they were just very nice, very heartfelt scenes, and I appreciated them.
Indeed.
Yeah. So I really liked this episode a lot. How about you?
Fabulous. Yeah, I don't really have anything else to say beyond what you said. I liked it for pretty much all of the same reasons. It was just a really fun and interesting episode. You had some relatively high stakes at some points, so it was also kind of exciting here and there. But then, like you said, it also had some really meaningful moments that kind of gave us a little bit of extra character development, which obviously we've already had plenty of character development up to this point because it's 8 years in, but gives them different levels of character development in their new roles that they now inhabit. So, yeah. It was a good episode. Yeah. I enjoyed it very much.
And more Poulter, please.
Yes, indeed. I was very happy to see that Poulter was back. I was concerned that he might have gone with Hammond, but thankfully he did not. Yeah.
So what are we going to talk about next?
Next is Stargate Atlantis, Season 1, Episode 4, 38 minutes. The team finds themselves in mortal danger when their puddle jumper ship becomes lodged in the Stargate.
Ooh.
Indeed. Does IMDb have anything? That was the TVDB.
Okay.
Let's see what IMDb says. This is completely different. Well, not completely different, but they have a little extra detail here. Shepard gets bitten by a wraith-like bug and is dying. While the puddle jumper returns, it gets stuck in the Stargate. There's 38 minutes to find a solution.
Okay. Yeah, I remember some of this episode. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So I'll be excited.
Enjoyable, as I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good times.
Yeah, agreed. Having a good time.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to Stargazing with Kathy and Mary. This podcast is completely listener-supported, and we couldn't do it without you. Show your support by telling everyone you know about how awesome this show is. Your reviews help a lot, especially on Apple Podcasts. You can find us at stargazing.space. Reach out to us via email at stargazing@gmail.com. Find us on social media at Stargazing on Instagram, stargazing@mastodon.world. Get some merch at tinyurl.com/stargazing. And finally, show your financial support by joining us over at patreon.com/stargazing. Thank you for traveling through the gate with us. We'll catch you next time on Stargazing with Kathy and Mary.
I'm Kathy.
I'm Mary.
The end.
The end.
I feel unsatisfied, like the spiel wants to come out and it can't.
You can say the spiel if you want
to. It will come out. It's okay. No, it'll be fine. It'll be fine.
Fair.
Yeah.